This is Between the Lines with Tom Switzer.
Seventy years ago, in 1948, the State of Israel was declared. As a result, five Arab armies attacked Jewish settlements in the region. Israel fought back and captured the western part of Jerusalem. Then, in a later war, this is the Six-Day War in 1967, Israel took all of the city. Today, East Jerusalem is now considered occupied territory by the Arabs, who also claim the city as their capital. So, why is this history important today? Well, because a few months ago, President Trump declared that the capital of Israel is Jerusalem and that the State Department would move the US Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Well, to get to the bottom of all this, let's hear from Daniel Pipes. He's the president of the Middle East Forum in Philadelphia and author of several influential books on the Middle East. He's a guest of the Australia-Israel Jewish Affairs Council. Daniel, welcome back to the ABC.
Thank you, Tom. My 14th time.
Wow, 14. Well, now, Trump's not the first chief executive to say that he's going to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. He's just the first president to do it. Why?
Because he sees himself as a deal maker, and he sees taking this issue off the table as a step forward to be followed by other steps. In other words, he has a plan. He has said it's up to the Israelis and Palestinians to decide what they want to do, but I don't think that's what he really means. He really means to say, I have a plan, and you fellows are going to follow it.
But notwithstanding that plan, the prevailing wisdom in Europe, across the Arab world, is that the move will disrupt any chance for the peace process. You had 128 countries at the United Nations, including US allies. They decried Washington's decision. If Trump's decision's a good idea, why do so many states oppose it?
Well, they oppose it for two reasons. One, they don't understand that's part of a larger plan on his part. And two, they are reflexively taking the Palestinian position and against Israel. Israel has always fared incredibly poorly, whatever the issue. You could be discussing breakfast foods. The United Nations would vote 128-5 against Israel. It just doesn't matter. In other words, the United Nations is a bunch of blocks. And the Arab-Muslim bloc is a very large one, 57 Muslim.
Yeah, but no country has its embassy in Jerusalem because Israel and the Palestinians both have claims to the city. And you'll often hear, and the ABC's broadcast many interviews on this subject during the course of the last few months, that, you know, this is a city sacred to millions and millions of people around the world, Christians, Muslims, Jews. And countries have said for many years, having an embassy in Israel in this city of Jerusalem would be seen as taking sides.
I don't understand why it's taking sides. And normally a state determines its capital and all other states send their embassies and consulates, missions to that capital without exception. Why is this one an exception? I mean, Rome is a deeply important city. Are we sending our embassies and consulates to Milan because of that? It makes no sense to me.
Well, the Palestinians would say that this decision by Trump disqualifies the United States as the role of mediator.
Well, the Palestinian leaders say a lot of things to win the support of their base, but of course that's not true. Should the U.S. government come up with a plan that's to their liking, they will be right there.
Now, if the United States goes ahead and recognizes Jerusalem as the capital, does that rule out that Washington could recognize Jerusalem as the capital of some future Palestinian state?
It certainly does not. And according to recent leaks coming from Arab diplomats, there are signs that the Trump administration plans, in fact, to recognize a Palestinian state with Jerusalem as its, Eastern Jerusalem, as its capital.
Fareed Zakaria from CNN and the Washington Post, he recently interviewed the Israeli leader Benjamin Netanyahu, and he makes the point, I'll run this quote by you, Daniel, and get your response. With this decision to move the American embassy to Jerusalem, President Trump did something puzzling for a person who claims to be a great deal maker. He made a massive preemptive concession to one side in a complicated negotiation without getting anything in return for it. That's Fareed Zakaria.
I'd respond to that by saying that what Trump did as a deal maker was to give something unexpected and very important to one side, and then he's going to follow it up by doing the same for the other side. I expect the leaks that have come out are correct and that he will recognize a Palestinian state with Israel with Jerusalem as its capital. He will internationalize the old city. He will provide $40 billion to them. He will decide that the Israeli towns on the West Bank have to be reduced in number. He will give the Palestinians more authority on the West Bank. The only thing he will demand from them is that they give up the right of return, which is a nominal point because there's no chance of that happening.
Your critics like former President Jimmy Carter, Professor John Mearsheimer from the University of Chicago, Anthony Lowenstein here in this country, they say that if there's no two-state solution, Israel will have a vast number of Palestinians who live under Israeli sovereignty. And in those circumstances, Israel will not be able to be Jewish and democratic. In other words, it'll lose its democratic character because it will be ruling over a large group of people without giving them rights, or it will lose its Jewish character because of the number of Palestinians that'll overwhelm the number of Israeli Jews.
Your question implies that I've come out against the two-state solution. I have indeed come out with it now. But in the long term, when the Palestinians give up their irredentist, eliminationist ambitions to end the Jewish state of Israel, it seems like a perfectly reasonable outcome. But now it's not reasonable because the Palestinians have not. So, yeah, I agree in theory with those points. Yeah. I just don't think the Palestinians at this point are ready to have a state because they're trying to destroy their neighbor.
My guest is Daniel Pipes from the Middle East Forum in Philadelphia. He's one of America's most distinguished commentators on the Middle East, and we've been chatting about the Israeli-Palestinian issue. Let's change the subject a bit, Daniel, and talk about Saudi Arabia. I mean, Washington and Israel have developed closer strategic relations with Saudi Arabia and diplomatic relations with many Sunni Gulf states. Why is it in the interest of either the United States or Israel to forge closer ties with a regime, a pretty brutal regime in Saudi Arabia, that has exported this militant Sunni Islam across the region?
Everything you say and much more could be said about the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, but it's undergoing a remarkable transformation. There's news, there's good news every day coming out of Riyadh, whether it be about the status of women or the authority of the Islamic institutions or foreign policy. Mohammed bin Salman, known as MBS, the Crown Prince, is undertaking a would-be revolution. If he succeeds, Saudi Arabia will be a very different country internally and externally. And I think we should be doing everything possible to encourage him, to help him. And indeed, my organization is doing just that.
Yeah. And yet, you'll have a Muslim lobby outfit called the Australian Federation of Islamic Councils. Now, that's come out in recent weeks accusing you of, quote, a clear history of extreme anti-Islamic rhetoric and an agenda to demonize Muslims through a distorted view of the Islamic religion. Now, that's an Australian Muslim lobby group. They want to oppose and ban you from speaking in Australia. How would you respond to those concerns?
I would say this is typical of the Islamists. The Islamists want to present themselves as just your average Muslims. And when someone like me comes along who says that radical Islam is the problem, in other words, Islamists are the problem, and moderate Islam is the solution, well, they want to shut that down. They want to portray me as being anti-Islam, anti-Muslim. Well, no, hardly. I work with Muslims all the time against the Islamists. It's like saying someone who's anti-Nazi is anti-German. No, not anti-German, anti those Germans. I'm anti those Muslims, and so are plenty of other Muslims, and we work together. It's old hat. They keep doing this and they keep failing.
Yeah, Colin Rubenstein from the Australian Israel Jewish Affairs Council, who's helped bring you out here, he was quoted in The Australian saying, the characterization of Pipes as racist is cheap, false propaganda designed to shut discussion of genuine issues. I suppose the question here is, are we in Western liberal democracies reaching the stage where many serious subjects can't be debated openly without inspiring almost immediate hysteria?
We have reached that point. Mm. These are open questions that need to be debated. What is the nature of Islamism and how must it be dealt with? These are very important political policy questions that need to be discussed. Closing down the debate is obviously a very bad idea.
Yeah. Well, listen, let's change the subject completely and go a blast from the past. This is April 1992. This is the ABC host, Kerry O'Brien, with the Libyan ambassador to Paris, just as he's being expelled by the French government over terror accusations.
What is happening now is that we are gradually building American dictatorship over the world, and my word for it, the appeasement of Munich is taking place all over again.
Ambassador, you are part of a government that is driven by a dictator. Is that not correct?
No, it is not correct, because we have the people. Did you ever hear of an ambassador saying that if my leader interferes with the Libyan law and extradites these two citizens, I will resign? You never heard it, and you will hear it. I've said it 10 times again, and I'm saying it now. Going in Libya is a people's democracy the world never had since Athens.
Daniel Pipes, you were on that late line panel more than a quarter of a century ago. What memories does that evoke?
I don't remember the specifics of the panel, but I do definitely remember the show, and it is simply the most remarkable TV show I've ever been on, and it was hilarious, and I gather you remember it as well.
Well, I was a university student. I was a third-year university student in 1992, and I started developing an interest in American foreign policy, and I thought, wow, what a debate. It whet my appetite to do shows like Between the Lines.
Very good.
Daniel, it's a pleasure having you back in the country. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, Tom.
That was Daniel Pipes from the Middle East Forum. He's in Sydney as a guest of AJAC. Well, thanks for your company on Between the Lines this week. I'm Tom Switzer. Hope you can tune in next week or catch the show at any time via the ABC Listen app.